Hello and welcome to Fitstairs World of Sport in association with our new sponsors, Boodles. I'm Adrian Clark, and today I'm joined by Lola Katz-Roberts and Henry Beasley, plus special guests, as we look ahead to another massive week of sport. Coming up, who wins boxing's ultimate grudge match when Chris Eubank Jr. and Conor Benn try to settle a 35-year-long family feud at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
Eubanks has got to take this opportunity. Here we go.
Is this all over? It's all over.
Defeat for both of them to the other one is completely unthinkable. They're carrying the family name with them here. They're very much aware of the history.
It's also FA Cup semi-final weekend with three unexpected teams in the frame to land the world's greatest cup competition this year.
Arteta, good strength, brilliant effort. Oh, what a goal! It's just world class. It really is.
And at Sandown Park, we can't wait for the finale to the jump season with a battle royale taking place to win the leading trainer prize. Although, that's not what's getting Cornelius Lycett excited.
20-1, if that prize is available on the day, I'm going to be dashing down to have a little bit each way on a real favourite.
Yes, plenty to come. Look, if you're over 18 and love your sport like we do, you've landed in exactly the right place. If you also have an interest in sports betting, this could definitely be the podcast for you. We're not here to give financial advice or even act as a tipping service, but you will get insightful analysis and opinion on upcoming sporting events. Our mantra is pretty simple, really. Never gamble more than you could shrug off losing if you accidentally put your wallet in the washing machine. Remember, 18 plus, please bet responsibly and visit gambleaware.org. Right, let's get cracking. And there's only one place to start, and that's the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for the most eagerly anticipated boxing bout of 2025. Chris Eubank Jr. and Conor Benn cannot stand the sight of each other, just as their famous fathers couldn't either. And they meet in front of a sellout 63,000 crowd on Saturday night. There isn't a world title at stake. In fact, there's no belt of note on the line at all. But in this instance, none of that really matters. Bad blood and family pride take precedence. But will the fight itself live up to the billing? And with this being such a bitter feud, could a knockout win be more likely rather than it going the distance? Sky Sports boxing commentator Andy Clark joined us earlier and thinks yes to both.
I'd be surprised if it went the distance. I think a knockout is almost guaranteed, I would say, because Ben is going to be aggressive. He'll feel that he needs to get this done quite early in the first half of the fight. Eubank, it'll be interesting to see how he starts, because he could take the view that he needs to get through the first few rounds and then the fight will inevitably come in his favour. Or he could choose to try and hold the centre of the ring and not trade with Ben exactly, but certainly meet him on the way in and try and stamp his authority on it. It's an 18-foot ring, I discovered yesterday as well. Usually, British rings are 20 feet, so it's the smallest one you can have. Ben insisted on that being in his contract, I'm told. And that basically leaves less space for manoeuvre. You could look at that and feel like it maybe favours Ben. It definitely favours an all-out war.
Now, Eubank is a much bigger man. Ben is 7 years younger. Ben's had to put weight on. Eubank's had to lose weight to meet in the middle for this fight. Is that an advantage for him? Or is there a chance that Eubank is going to be wiped out energy-wise to try and get down to that lower weight?
He looked okay yesterday. We did the open workouts yesterday. And often if a fighter's really struggling with the weight, they won't really do much. But he did do a pad session, got a good sweat on. He'll definitely make the weight, Eubank. He's very professional. He's never missed weight. It is hard work for him to make 160, but I think people are maybe making a bit much of it. There's this £10 rehydration clause as well. But again, these are things that he agreed to in the contract. He didn't have to, but he signed it. So he can't think that it's going to be some huge problem that's going to take his energy away to the point where he feels it'll seriously affect his chances of winning, or he wouldn't be doing this, because there's so much on the line here for the pair of them. They are getting very well paid, but this really is about winning, or rather about not losing. Defeat for both of them to the other one is completely unthinkable. They're carrying the family name with them here too, so it's not just the pressure they put on themselves. They're very much aware of course, of the history, but and you said it at the start, they're very much aware of the fact that lots of people will be watching this because it's Eubank versus Benn.
So I'm wrestling with two theories here, because we know he has a puncher's chance, but is Benn good enough for this level? But then again, has Eubank got the power to KO Benn? For you, who wins?
You've got to install Eubank as a pretty heavy favourite, just because if you look at what's actually happened in real life and forget about the smoke and mirrors, which is a great part of boxing, it's great fun. Eubank is much more experienced. He's boxed at a much higher level, and he is a middleweight, whereas Benn is coming up to middleweight. He doesn't have the resume that Eubank has, but he is undefeated. And that brings a confidence and a danger with him that can't be dismissed. And I know plenty of people whose opinions I really respect who give Benn a really good chance in this fight, because I think a lot of people have just got this feeling in the back of their mind that logic and rationality might not play that big a part here, because there's a lot of emotion, and that on the night that could not decide the fight exactly, but definitely play a part.
Oh, that really does whet the appetite, doesn't it? Big thanks to Andy. I cannot wait for this because I don't know what's going to happen. Lola, let's start with you. It's really captured the public imagination, this scrap, hasn't it? Because it's not high level particularly, but everyone's into it.
I think, you know, it all starts, if you go back to the 90s, when the dads drew 18 million eyeballs. So, you know, clearly those two surnames were always going to get a lot of attention. And I think where it started was very much this legacy fight. There was actually quite a lot of mutual respect on both sides. I think Conor Benn said to Chris Eubank backstage at the Sports Industry Awards, listen, you and me can make a lot of money. So they were from a starting point of definitely kind of respecting the family names and wanting to continue the heritage. But then somewhere along the line between the egg slap and the failed doping test, it's all become really acrimonious. And given, you know, in boxing, these rivalries are often quite confected to create a narrative around a fight. This is, you know, they genuinely cannot stand each other, as you say. And you just don't know what's going to happen when they get in the ring. You know, what happens when you put two people who actually hate each other in a boxing ring?
I've got a fair idea, Lola. Conor Benn in particular sees this as personal because his dad didn't beat Chris Eubank Jr. I'm the only one in the room old enough to remember these fights, unfortunately. But they were brilliant contests. The whole country really stopped for those moments. Eubank won the first fight. Then there was a contentious draw that Benn felt he won. They never got to meet for a third time. So I think that Conor Henry really takes this so seriously. He feels he has to honour the family name here by winning. But I tell you what, it's not going to be easy for him, is it?
No, I think what kind of I'm most looking forward to seeing here is the really conflicting styles as well we're going to see. I mean, this is a massive step outside of Conor's comfort zone, right? He's never fought at this level. And his dad, Nigel's actually on record saying he's 99% sure that his son is going to win within four rounds. And if he is going to win, he's probably going to have to do it within four rounds, isn't he? The longer the fight goes on, Eubank obviously becomes a massive, massive favourite. And yeah, I think it's just going to be really interesting to see how he deals with being that far out of his comfort zone.
Yeah, he's 15-1, by the way, to win it by KO inside the first three rounds. If he's going to get the stoppage, Conor Benn, the odds would indicate that it would be between sort of rounds 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. They don't think that he really stands a chance on points. And I kind of make those odds absolutely spot on, because Chris Eubank Jr. has fought for world titles. He's boxed more than double the amount of rounds. He's the bigger man. He's certainly the more cultured fighter. And I just think if he can withstand what is bound to be an unbelievable barrage early on, then he should be able to pick him off. I mean, Lola, there's been a lot of talk about the weight category here. So Eubank is kind of fighting at the weight that he's fought at through most of his career, even though he has fought at higher weights. Conor Benn is coming up. Just to explain this for the listeners, there's a rehydration clause which has been inserted here, and it's controversial because in the eyes of Chris Eubank's dad, Chris Eubank Sr., it's dangerous because he's not allowed to put on 10 extra pounds by the morning of the fight, which is normal because after the weigh-in, you're drinking plenty, you're eating plenty, you're getting your strength up, and he's effectively not being allowed to do that. Now, is that going to drain Chris Eubank, I wonder.
I think it's interesting if you go back to when the original fight was supposed to take place, Chris Eubank Jr. was doing all his workouts in a t-shirt that said 60%, because he said he was going to be at 60% capacity and that that would be enough to beat Conor Benn, but that's where he would be because of the cuts he had to make for the weight. So, I mean, I've seen some different opinions about it. Eubank's last four fights have all been at this weight, so it's a myth that he's coming down too much. I'm not sure really how much you read into that, but I think just on a physical level, Eubank is a big man coming down to that weight, you know, maybe not being able to hydrate properly before the fight. You have to think, I mean, my thought was, if it does go deep, how much is he going to have left in the tank?
No, I think that's absolutely a valid point. And there is a blemish on his record. So earlier on in his career, Chris Eubank Jr., the only two defeats were against Billy Joe Saunders and George Groves, two top tier fighters. I don't think there was any shame in that, but he did get beaten by Liam Smith by knockout. And it was the first time we've ever seen a Eubank shaken and wobbling, because let me tell you, his dad had the most granite chin I've ever seen. You just couldn't phase him. But his son, Chris Eubank Jr., has obviously shown that there is a fallibility there. That's bound to G up, I think, Conor Benn, Henry.
Fundamentally, it is going to come down to, can he survive the early onslaught, isn't it? That's the big question here. And if he can overcome that, and the hydration isn't too much of an issue as the fight kind of goes deeper, then, yeah, it's hard to see past him, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about cool heads as well. You've got 63,000 fans there. It's going to be hyped up,
yeah,
you know, to the max. Conor Benn struggles to contain himself in a press conference. You know, his anger is such that, can he keep a cool head in the moment that matters? If he can, he has a chance here, a puncher's chance. But for me, it has to be Eubank Jr., because he's smart, he is calm and collected, and actually, with his dad likely not to be present because he's fallen out with him at the moment, I don't think that he is seeing this as much as the grudge match as Conor Benn is. Come on in, guys. Give us a little bit of a tip. What are you going with?
I think Eubank's going to win on points.
I think that's a smart play. That's my selection as well. Lola, what you got?
I'm going to be bold and say Eubank by knockout.
Oh, yeah.
Everything that you've said about Conor Benn, everything that I've observed in press conferences and stuff, he is brimming. He's a pot coming to boiling point. You just think the lid could fly off at any moment. And I think you're exactly right. He is taking it very personally. I think Chris Eubank, in a press conference, senior, going way back, said something about Conor Benn that he really didn't like. And you could just see it in his face that he'd taken it really personally. So I just think, you know, he'll come out flying. And as we've all said, Eubank is the more cultured fighter. So, yeah, I reckon he'll knock him down.
You might be onto something, because he's never been hit by a guy this big before either, Conor Benn. It's certainly no one that's boxed at that level. It's going to be interesting. Let's bring in our odds guy now, Jonathan Smith, who can tell us who the money is coming for in this huge fight.
Not that this is a fight without intrigue in and of itself from a betting viewpoint, if only because of the trajectory of the two fighters. Eubank, the bigger and more experienced man, is seemingly generously priced at about 157, a 63% chance to beat the younger unbeaten Benn in a fight that looks set to ignite from the very first bell. Fitzdez set the under-over line at 8.5 rounds.
Thanks, Jonathan. You can watch Eubank versus Benn on DAZN or Sky Sports box office on Saturday night. Ringwalks are around 10 p.m. Welcome back. If you'd like to place a bet on the boxing, it's pretty easy. Just visit fitstairs.com. Fitstairs also have a brand new world-class app as well as a telephone and text betting service. If you give them a call, you can get prices on any market as well as special bets. The number you need is 0207 851 5407, or you can text the office on 07492 882 213 and they'll get back to you. Remember though, it's 18 plus only, and please gamble responsibly. Now, Willie Mullins and Dan Skelton take their battle for the British Jumps Trainers Championship to the final fence, quite literally this weekend. Mullins, a legendary figure, of course, has cut Skelton's lead at the top of the standings to just over 10 grand at the time of recording, and looks to hold all the aces in the £175,000 Bet365 Gold Cup at Sandown on Saturday. Mullins could also run four horses against the likely favourite John Bond in the celebration chase, also worth just under £100,000 to the winner. Our racing expert Cornelius Lycett caught up with Henry earlier on to put forward his selections for the big day of racing at Sandown.
Last year's winner is really interesting, Minella Kakuna. That was an astonishing run in the Grand National, really. Johnny Burke, who was on board, said he felt the saddle slip before they jumped the first. Well, he managed to get round, finished seventh, beaten 13 lengths. That offers really interesting possibilities. Clearly, those who are concerned about it will point out that the Grand National was on the 5th of April, so there hasn't been that much time to recover, and he must have had a hard race because clearly things didn't go in his favour. But I think Minella Kakuna is an interesting contender. 7 and 8 and 9 year olds normally win the Sandown last day feature, so he's interesting. The other, an 8 year old trained by Willie Mullins, is Dancing City, is really interesting.
Yeah, I really like him. Yeah,
a mark of 151. He's got to have recovered from a tumble at Aintree. When people say a nice racing weight, I'm always thinking in my mind 10-10, 10-11. Minella Kakuna, Dancing City, they're the two Mullins horses. And two others. The National Hunt Chase at Cheltenham clearly turned out to be very good form, with Heidi Keller going on and winning the Irish Grand National. Now, Ben Jones rode the winner that day because Sean Bowen was on Resplendent Grey. And Resplendent Grey was fourth, beaten 11 lengths on that occasion. Conditions are likely to be, it's not going to be a desperate slog, as this race can sometimes be. But having said that, a bit further than 3.5 miles, at this time of the year, it will clearly be something of a marathon. And Resplendent Grey, trained by Ollie Murphy, will be keeping going when others have had enough, I think. So that one's on my shortlist. And the other one, we love a progressive horse, don't we? There is a lovely progressive horse in there, I think. Aged 8, trained by Alan King, called the Doyen Chief, who's on a hat trick. He won at Kempton and then at Warwick. He's done little wrong in 5 races this season. He's going up in distance. He could be very interesting as well at a bit of a price. You like, because you're a cheeky so-and-so, and you know I don't like being called Corn. You like to call them Corn's Quartet. Minella Kakuna, Dancing City, Resplendent Grey, and the Doyen City would be a little quartet to consider for the big one on Saturday.
Quinnies, I just wanted to finish by saying a quick word on the best horse that we'll see at Sandown on Saturday. And I am actually going, so I will see John Bond in the flesh. He's unbeaten anywhere outside of Cheltenham, and he's going for a third win in the Grade 1 Celebration Chase.
Worth just remembering, John Bond, as you rightly say, going for 3 in a row. And Nicky Henderson has done 3 in a row in this race with Altior in recent years as well. So it's a race with which he has got a particular affinity. I think the thing about John Bond, if he is underrated, is because when he's good, he's very, very good. When he's not so good, he ain't great. So he has had those ups and downs. Is he 5 from 5 at Sandown, I think, John Bond?
Yeah.
But another great favourite of mine is in the same race. Edward Stone has got a real good following as well. And yeah. I was slightly affronted on Edward Stone's behalf when I saw a bit of 20-1 available about him. They won't want conditions to get too dry, but this is a horse who's got some very good form against John Bond. Should not be underestimated. He's got some very good form around Sandown. He's won a Tingle Creek.
Yeah. I think he won the Henry VIII, didn't he?
Yeah, and when he's got round, he's always been placed at Sandown. 20-1, if that is prices available on the day, I'm going to be dashing down to have a little bit each way on a real favourite. Two other horses running on Saturday very quickly. In the first race, great big competitive, it's called the Novice Championship Final or something. It's a race in which 4-year-olds have won 2 of the last 4. And there's a horse in there with very little weight called Nardaran, trained by Paul Nichols and ridden by Harry Cobden. Took a little bit of time to acclimatise, but won a race at Taunton in early April in comprehensive style, in a good time, beating a previous winner. Lots of nice hurdlers emerge from there. And I think Nardaran could easily be another of those in the 150 race. And then just towards the end of the day, Dan Skelton's got Risk in the Ground, one at Ayr and one at Cheltenham. Seems to be thriving in the springtime, has gone up in the handicap as a result. He's won plenty of races. He's done his bit at Ayr and Cheltenham. But I think he might easily go and do it again. And I'll tell you what, if the championship's still going at 4:45 on Saturday, it's going to be exceptionally exciting.
Always good, isn't he, Henry? I did enjoy that. Yeah, the world's your oyster, really, with corn-related nicknames, isn't it? We'll have to work on those in the weeks to come. He did bring up a few horses to keep our eye on. Manila Kakuna, Dancing City, Resplendent Grey and Doyen Chief. Which ones do you agree with most, then?
Yeah, I was actually quite keen on one of these. Dancing City, for me in particular, really stood out to me. He's actually got a really similar profile to last year's winner of the race, Manila Kakuna, who did win this race for Willie Mullins. He did take a tumble at Aintree, which is a slight concern. He's still really unexposed over fences. He's only run four times. He's improving. Eight of the past 11 winners of this race have carried 11 stone or less. He's in here off 10 stone 11. Yeah, I think he's got a great chance and the step up and triple really suit.
If a horse, a relatively young horse, has fallen for the first time, is it not more prudent to then almost swerve it to see what the reaction is next time out before diving in, or will the price reflect that?
Yeah, I think his price is about 8-1 at the moment, and I think that's probably fair based on the fact that, yeah, he did take a tumble obviously last time and it was a heavy fall. But quite often, you know, horses can learn quite a lot. It's potentially no bad thing there for Dancing City in this case to maybe, as I say, take a tumble at Aintree, and he's going to learn, you know, he's going to learn a bit. He's only raced four times over fences. Like I say, still very unexposed, very inexperienced. As I say, sometimes it's just no bad thing for horses to kind of really respect their obstacles a little bit more. And yeah, I can see him running really well on Saturday, to be honest.
Yeah, the big narrative around the meeting is obviously Willie Mullins kind of gate crashing the Leading Trainers Championship. I know that he won it last year, but he's sort of come on ridiculously strong thanks to an amazing Cheltenham and Grand National, Willie Mullins. Just on him, is he the GOAT? Is he the GOAT? You know, because it feels to me like he's the ultimate horse trainer. A little bit, there's a little bit of genius about him. I mean, what makes him so special?
With Willie Mullins, a kind of apt comparison for our cross-sport listeners is Pep Guardiola.
Okay.
And Pep Guardiola's Man City, you know, four league titles in a row, they've set this kind of relentless, repetitive pace of just excellence. And I think from a bookmaker's perspective, when we look at Cheltenham and we look at Willie Mullins' domination, you know, it can make us feel a bit grumpy, really. This theme of Willie Mullins' domination at Cheltenham is actually a relatively new phenomenon. So this year we had a joint record of 7 odds on favourites, and that record was set in 2021. And if you go back to even 2008, there was only 1 odds on favourite, and before that, sometimes you wouldn't get any. So it's quite a new thing, utter domination from one person at the festival. He is the festival's dominant force, and you know, he equaled his own record this year, saddling 10 winners at the meeting. So the Cheltenham dominance, you just have to tip your hat to him, really, and say it's amazing. Whether it's good for British racing or not, that is something that bookmakers and the racing public will continue to debate.
Is he just given the best horses, Henry, by the leading owners, or is there something about the way that he gets the horses ready for these events that marks him out as extra special?
There's a couple of factors at play here. I mean, as Lola mentioned, Pep Guardiola, Willie Mullins has got the squad depth, right? He does have the very best animals in his yard. He's got the best team buying the best horses for him. And he's got owners that fundamentally are prepared to pay $300,000-$400,000 or more in cases for these top National Hunt horses. But it hasn't always been like this. And this is something that's really important to mention as well. Willie Mullins is relentless in his pursuit of getting better. He's never standing still. I remember, I think it was 2022, he trained 10 Cheltenham Festival winners, and there was no sign of him slowing down, you know. British champion trainer last year, and he's come back and fundamentally he's probably going to do it again. And just to your point, Clarkie, as well, about preparing his horses for the big days, there is nobody better, in my view anyway, than Willie Mullins at targeting a big race. And he gets his horses absolutely spot on for the big days.
He's a master as well as playing the handicap system as well, I think, isn't he?
Yeah.
Which is something, you know, it's a cynical way to look at it, but all of the trainers do it. Mm. And I think that he seems to work that system better than most. We heard from Cornelius Lysett earlier. Now it's time to bring in our Fitstairs sponsor trainer, Ben Pauling. He has plenty of skin in the game and sent us this update earlier.
The final day of the jump season. It's always a brilliant day to be involved in. The champions are crowned. We may run Pick Rock, I think, a horse that we've always liked in the Josh Gifford Novice Handicap Chase. He's in good order. He's had to have a little bit of work on his jumping, but hopefully now with that squared up, he could run a nice race. Bad is also in the race. He may well take his chance, or he could go to Ireland next week. But I suppose the standout for us would be Wolf Moon, who runs in the Novice Handicap Championship, the first race on the card. A great series. It's a £100,000 pot. and he's a progressive novice that's been aimed at this all season, so hopefully he can run a big race. A review of the season overall, you know, any season where you manage to bag two Grade 1 winners is going to be looked upon as a very successful year. We've had a quieter end to the season than I would have liked, but I think overall we've had some fantastic performances. We've got some very, very nice horses going forward. Once again, we've managed to produce a nice number of winners and we've broken the £1 million barrier. So it'll be looked back upon as a very positive season. The strength and depth that we've got in the younger echelons of the yard is really quite something very special. And we're looking forward to next year already.
So then, Henry, what do you make of that from Ben? Wolf Moon seemed pretty bullish about his chances in the 120, 12 to 1.
Yeah, he saved that for the end, didn't he? big field here. There's going to be 20 plus runners. That should really suit. And he's definitely still improving. But I think Ben this season has proved that he's been more than capable of targeting a big race. I also did just want to briefly mention Pick Rock, which Ben mentioned there. I actually was at Ben's yard before Cheltenham, and this was one of the horses they were really sweet on in the novice handicap chase there. Didn't jump well enough at Cheltenham. Ben's assured us that he's done some schooling, and I'm sure he'll jump better on Saturday. Do think he's got a good chance in the novice handicap chase.
Interesting stuff. We wish Ben the best of luck. Now, in terms of backing Mullins or Skelton to win the Trainers Championship, if you want to have a flutter on that, just give the Fitstairs private office a ring for prices. I'm reliably informed they will answer inside two rings. So just call 0207 851 5407. In terms of the racing itself, let's rejoin Jonathan Smith now and see how the markets are developing ahead of the Jumps finale at Sandown.
The feature race is the wide open Bet365 Gold Cup, formerly the Whitbread, of course, and they bet 5 to 1 the field here with the Willie Mullins trained high class hero the favourite. But he disappointed at long odds on last time out at Thurles. Elsewhere, the Grade 1 Celebration Chase looks a fascinating event, and with all that big prize money on offer, the trainer's title could go down to the very last race.
And remember, you can watch all the live racing from Sandown on ITV this Saturday, starting with the 120 Novices Championship Final Handicap Hurdle. Now, Fitstairs World of Sport is proud to be sponsored by Boodles, the only fine jewellery brand who loves sport just as much as you do. Boodles are great champions of British sport, which is why they felt like a natural fit when partnering with our show. You can find their flagship store at 178 Bond Street in central London. It really is something special. And their owner, Michael Wainwright, is, like Lola here, a massive Liverpool fan, and after Arsenal slipped up at home to Crystal Palace on Wednesday night, they now need just a single point against Spurs to seal the title this weekend. Lola, I mean, as a Liverpool fan, I know that you're about to win the title, but it's a bit of a damp squib, isn't it? It's dull, right?
I couldn't disagree more, Clarkie.
Seriously?
I find it really odd. I think it's because people are so worried about Liverpool fans being unbearable in celebrations. And we proudly call ourselves the Unbearables, by the way.
Oh, you are that. Yeah.
But, you know, we've got more points than Man City had this time last year. We've been on a 26-game unbeaten run, came to an end at Craven Cottage the other week. We're not getting the credit that we deserve from the wide public. And I think it's just sour grapes from the rest of the media. I mean, this Premier League season has all been new narrative every week, so I think no one's quite known where to situate themselves after City so spectacularly blew up. We've been really, really good, and we deserve a lot of credit for that. I don't think, you know, no one said it was boring when City won four titles in a row, so it's obviously,
I think
just
they did a bit, didn't they, to be fair. I think we're all getting a bit tired of that.
Well, yeah, you got, you know, you got what you wished for, a different Premier League winner, and now no one's happy, so no.
Lola, I was only teasing you. You deserve it, champions. You've only lost twice all season.
Triggered.
Yes, absolutely. I've got you going, though. I love it. Look, Fitstairs World of Sport is sponsored by Boodles. You can find out all about them on www.boodles.com. As if the boxing and racing aren't enough to stop us all having a social life, it's also FA Cup semi-final weekend. Crystal Palace take on Aston Villa beneath the Wembley Arch on Saturday before high-flying Nottingham Forest face Manchester City the following day. The Eagles have never won the FA Cup, while Villa and Forest haven't tasted success in this competition since the 1950s. A little earlier on, I caught up with football commentator and celebrity Forest fan Matt Davis-Adams to hear how the tricky trees are feeling.
Forest are 7-2.
to beat Manchester City. Do you think that that's fair value?
I think it's really good value. Yeah, I mean, they obviously beat us really handily at the Etihad earlier in the season when they were in that horrible run of form. That's like the one W amongst all the L's in that run. So I get why City are favourites, but until Tuesday night, Forest were the highest ranked team left in the competition, and they're only not now because City have played a game more than them. So it's definitely good value, yeah. But I mean, the fatalist in me thinks that, you know, City are going to win 1-0 with an 82nd minute deflected strike from Gundogan, and there we go.
Who's going to be the hero? If in your head as a fan, who do you think is going to come up with a moment to remember for Nottingham Forest in this one?
Well, narrative-wise, it'd be nice if it was Morgan Gibbs-White, wouldn't it? Because obviously he's been heavily linked with City at the moment. I think he's an incredible player who is definitely valuing his worthy of his place in the England squad. He's been our talisman for a lot of the season. He'll be the captain in this game because Ryan Yates is suspended. Let's say it's going to be him. He's going to take that armband and use it to hoist him above his even normal exceptional performance levels. And yeah, maybe winning 1-0 thanks to a last-minute Morgan Gibbs White goal rather than losing 1-0.
You're 9-2 joint outsiders to win the FA Cup alongside Palace. That's probably because you're playing Manchester City in the semi. I'll tell you what, you're 7-1 to win the FA Cup and qualify for the Champions League. Is it on?
I think the Champions League is looking good now, I've got to say, because our remaining fixtures are pretty good. The FA Cup, I don't think that we are favourites for. But then, you know, if you beat City, then you've got to say you've got a chance, because we've already beaten Palace this season and we've already beaten Villa. So it'd be a tight match against either of those. But oddly, and this is a bizarre statement, I think we're more likely to qualify for the Champions League than win the FA Cup.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much to Matt. Yes, good game, isn't it? Nottingham Forest against Manchester City. It did beat them, as we discussed there last time out. I think we all know the way that Forest would approach the game. Do you give them a chance, Henry?
Yeah, like you say, Forest are a bit of a throwback, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're happy to not have much of the ball, and they'll throw it up to the big man, Chris Wood, up front. They're actually the only team in the Premier League this season, despite sitting fourth, to average less than 40% possession. They're not going to have much of the ball, let's be honest, are they, against Man City? But that's not going to bother them at all. Yeah, you can see them sort of getting an early goal potentially and then really sort of shutting up shop and making it difficult for City to create chances. That being said, this is kind of what City do, isn't it, at this time of year, you know? They're not perfect, let's be honest. They didn't play brilliantly the other night against Villa, but that was a huge result. They're coming in here with a lot of momentum.
Yeah, they'll be making their seventh consecutive FA Cup semi-final appearance, which is extraordinary, really. I mean, that's nearly a decade.
And they have lost a few, it has to be said, along the way.
Yeah. I remember one in particular. but, you know, I think it's days like this. If Forest can beat City, it would be so refreshing if we could see Palace end their trophy drought that's existed for their entire existence, because they've never won a major trophy. Villa are looking at 35 years, and Forest, I think it was 1990 when they last won the League Cup.
Do you know what? I fancy Forest. I think that they've got a chance, yeah, because motivation. I think for Nottingham Forest here, this is massive. And I think here, the FA Cup will matter more to Forest. And if they can get that first goal, they are among the best front runners, aren't they, in the Premier League. They've come so far. And I think that their style of play, where you sit in, defend, and then hit teams on the break, I think it's well suited to a cup semi-final at Wembley, because you know that City will give you chances on the break. So that's a great game. But before that, we've got the Palace-Villa one. Huge for both, of course. Who do you fancy here? Because Villa have got goals in them, Henry, but not that many clean sheets.
No, I think, I mean, we all put up 2-2, didn't we, last weekend, but they absolutely blew Newcastle away at Villa Park. They were brilliant that day. Was a little bit worried about Palace having shipped 5 goals to City. Then they had a really good result last night, didn't they, to be fair? And I think that might give them a bit of momentum to build off. Villa are obviously favourites, I think, going in here. And like you say, it's been a while between drinks for them on the big stage. Villa favourites for me. And again, I think this probably comes down as well. One of the big stories here is Ollie Watkins. Is he going to start? So he obviously misses out against PSG. Was brilliant against Newcastle.
And if he doesn't start, sorry to interrupt, if he doesn't start, if I'm Ollie Watkins, I'm out. I'm checking out.
It's becoming quite hard to see him staying, isn't it, if he is left out? And don't forget, he did have that chance to leave, right? Arsenal were there, weren't they, in January.
So I've got a theory on this. If Villa do get Champions League again, right, I think Watkins could stay, because I don't think they're going to sign Marcus Rashford because of the wages. I wonder if, you know, Watkins was so integral last season. He plays a lot of minutes. He goes and plays quite a few minutes in the Euros as well. What if Unai Emery is just protecting him? You know, he's 29, turning 30 next year. How much football was he actually fighting fit to play this season? So I don't know if there's a bit of a long-term plan. I think contractually he's still locked in for another 3 years, I want to say. So I don't think it's as straightforward as Watkins has one foot out the door. I think if Villa can pull off Champions League qualification, I think he's going to be a very important part of their squad planning for next season.
Interesting times ahead for sure. I saw Eze and Mateta score two exquisite goals at Emirates Stadium this week. I fancy them to score against Aston Villa. Six clean sheets in 34 Premier League matches this season. Okay, let's play the three tenors now. Every week on this show, we discuss a trio of sporting events. And at the end of the pod, we all get a tenor each to place with Fitstairs. We'll be keeping a running league table of our performance throughout the season. In terms of last week, guys, it's a, I'm afraid, none of us picked up the money, although I still have a fiver alive at the Crucible Theatre where I back Mark Selby to win. So I'm holding out for him to come good between now and next week. In terms of this week's selections, let's start with you, Henry.
I've already given him a very good mention, but I just can't get away from Dancing City. As I said, he's off a mark of 151. I do think that could underestimate him. Don't forget there were people from the Mullen Yard that thought he had a realistic chance of beating Ballyburn at the Cheltenham Festival. And I think Fitstairs are actually paying five places on that race. I think he's a good bet. So I'm having my fiver each way at 8-1 on him.
8-1 each way. Interesting. Lola, is it horse racing for you?
Football for me, Clarkie. I'm going to go Forest to beat Man City at 7-2. And I think just goes back to what we said about the possession. Forest will not be remotely fazed by City having all the ball. They are a proper counter-attacking side. They have absolutely lethal pace on the break with Alanga and Callum Hudson-Odoi. And on that big Wembley pitch, I can just see, you know, them causing havoc.
That'd be good for the neutrals, I think, to have someone new in the FA Cup.
The romance.
Yeah, exactly. You're the romance killer in this room, Henry. Look, for me, I like Eubank on points. That's 11-4 with Fitstairs at the moment. But there's a lot of unknowns with that fight. It just can't be sure. So I'm going to go with football as well. I'm going to go with Villa Palace. I'm going to shamelessly sit on the fence. I've got quite a short price here. It's 19-10. So just under 2-1. It's both teams to score and under 3.5 goals. So effectively, I'm back in the 1-1 or the 2-1 either way. Both teams' scores landed in 68% of Villa's games in the Premier League. As I said earlier, just six clean sheets as well all season. I just don't know who's going to win, and I don't need to know if this bet lands. So fingers crossed, guys.
Sitting on the fence.
Yeah, exactly. But look, I wish you the best of luck. We need to get some points on this league table, don't we? That is all we've got time for on Fitstairs World of Sport. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please do give us a review, or even better, tell a friend about us. Reviews will help us to grow. So if you can see this show being part of your weekly routine, just take 30 seconds, say something nice. And honestly, that kind of thing really is massively helpful for spreading the word. And remember to subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcasts. That way, you'll never miss an episode. And if you'd like to find out more about Fitstairs and any offers you've heard here on today's show, please visit fitstairs.com. Remember that the prices you've heard here are subject to change. It's 18 plus only. Please gamble responsibly. Thank you, guys. Episode 2 done and dusted. Loads of great sport to look forward to this weekend. Cannot wait. That was Fitstairs World of Sport. Really hope you enjoyed it. I'm Adrian Clark, your producer with Simon Watts. Here with me in the studio today were Lola Katz-Roberts and Henry Beasley. Our special guests were odds compiler Jonathan Smith, Cornelius Lysett, Ben Pauling, Matt Davis-Adams, and Andy Clark on the boxing. Fitstairs World of Sport is a Track Record production, and we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. See you then.